KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
All right, quiet on the set.
Tin can phone, Mike and Armand Joe. Queens, we the ones that you can depend on to bring the voices from the inside out. Locked down, but they not locked out. No filter over here. Check what we be talking about. Feet up in the trenches, bop. While you're on defenses, metal detector before you enter. Shaky medical and see your stitches. They be pushing their weight around. Educate, didn't have the time to wait around. Taking classes while they played around. That's what we call staying down. That's what we call staying down. That's what we call staying down. Mike, Armand, dang it. Tin can phone.
Our host is quiet over there.
Gang. Misfit Adi, tin can phone. What's happening? I'm in this mud with my brothers. Armand, pretty boy Poos. What's happening?
Ooh, you see how I did? I'm coming live and direct from an undisclosed rehabilitation center downtown Portland. I have clothes on, shaved my face. Feel a little more gorgeous.
Right.
Artist Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr., how you doing today?
That's me. I feel
What's up,
okay.
Dog?
Yeah, I feel okay. I feel like I work over the weekends, so Thursday ends up being my Friday or something. I just like crash. Had a little bit of a slow morning, but we're on it. We're here. We're back. It's funny. You got a razor? What happened? How they let you? What's going on over there?
Okay, well, so real quick, they lost all of the clothes I came in with.
Yeah, you were mentioning that.
Yeah, which is like, I already filed a grievance, I already got real admin on them because
I heard it.
Yeah, so I lost all that. Blessed my grandmother, 82 years old, dropped me off some of my clothes that were at her house with my razor. After they sanitized that, a couple days to sanitize it, now I'm dipped and dripped.
I love it, just dripping. Woman, what are we talking about today?
Queezed, I mean, I missed the first part of you talking about what's going on in your life. So if you want to just kind of bring it to what's going on in your life. I had court yesterday, but it was really nothing. It was just put off another month.
You destroyed the suspense.
Oh, God, no.
What happened? We don't even know. We're sitting on the edge of our individual places where we're listening over here.
I'll tell you exactly what happened. Again, 2021, January... Mike, this is your job. What is it? January?
It is January. It's 2021. Oh, I guess it is the 21st also.
The 21st. So, yeah, no. Honest.
Doesn't matter.
All I did, court is going on via Zoom. If you're not incarcerated or locked up on your charges or on bond, do it on Zoom. So I just threw a button-up shirt on with my scrub pants on.
Love it.
And I sat in front of a judge, and he just said, okay, we're pushing this out another month. Till March or 2 months or something. Who knows? Who's counting?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, and we'll put a pin in that because I do want to hear about Queez's situation. But it is interesting where we'll end up is like, yeah, they're putting off these court situations for certain reasons, not out of the benevolence of their hearts. But that being said, yeah, Queez was popping.
You know, the work don't stop, man. Personally, you know, I'm just dealing with this COVID and, you know, consistently being present for my brothers that's coming home. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's my duty. It's my duty. You know, when my brother Ben died, I told him I'm going to take his vision and I'm going to live it out. I'm going to make sure that things that he taught us, the things that, you know, he lived how he wanted the world to be. And it's my duty to continue that. So I'm here for my brothers that's coming home. I'm here for my brothers that's struggling. Currently, you know, I got a couple guys coming home that's dealing with family issues, baby mama issues, and dealing with the courts. And as I was telling the artist, you know, before we came on, like a lot of dudes, including myself, anytime it has to do with presenting evidence against somebody else, it feels like snitching. It feels like, you know, I'm doing something wrong, I'm going against a code, or, you know, so like a lot of my guys is jeopardizing time with their kids or sacrificing being able to give their kids just that, their time, due to having to present evidence towards the baby mom or present evidence on why they're good dads. And it's a horrible thing, man. Like, it's a horrible thing to hear these dudes' stories and try to guide them into this, you know, this new battle. Cause we all figure coming home is the end. Like, I'm coming home from prison. Like, it's just great where everything is great now.
Right.
But nah, like, different levels causes different demons and different obstacles. So when you move up to a different level, then you face different obstacles, you know? So that's where I'm currently at, like, as of right now. I've been up since, like, 6-7 this morning, just dealing with my dudes, trying to help my guy understand the importance of, forget the G-code, forget the don't say nothing. Like, this is your daughter. This is your daughter that you're fighting for, you feel me? Like, it's not, you're not getting nobody no time. You're not putting somebody behind bars. But to stand in court with a suit on and point the finger at somebody, and like, not necessarily point the finger, but use evidence to show why you're a good dad and they're, you feel me, not a good mom type shit, it feels like snitching, you know what I'm saying? It feels like you're going against a code that we have been brainwashed to believe still exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff, including when you said the work don't stop, and now you're just like, your shift started at 6:37 in the morning, but you're like unemployed, right?
Facts.
But as you said, in kind of picking up Ben's dream, and I was thinking about this the other day, when I drove home, I parked my car, I was like late, exhausted, needed to make dinner still, and I was just thinking about Ben, which, you know, is great that Ben has been able to touch everyone so deeply that even gone is present in many ways and will continue to be. But, you know, I think when I came up, like, I wanted, before I even knew about nationalism and like whatever, I was just like seeking this like greater social group that I can like work for and protect. And war has been a paradigm in the world always since our knowing, but it never felt like the place, like I didn't feel like fighting for my country was somehow good for any reason. But I realized, like I have been realizing over time, but was thinking about last night, that it's a struggle internal to our nation that really requires this form of vigilance that is a front line, you know, it is a war, so to speak. And so, yeah, when you said the work don't stop, it's just like for people to recognize that, like, this work is the people who tend to only care about it. And that's why I was thinking about it, because I kind of just showed up on the scene and I'm like, well, I don't know what, I feel like I'm on the front line. There's no way to like back away slowly until I guess I max out. But it's also guys who have suffered incarceration that understand it in a way that then try to work to dismantle it. But they're also dealing with like their own struggles and then just the struggles to like be in society. But the other thing that I wanted to name, and you were talking about this a little bit before we started, is that in the last episode, you all heard about these kind of like intense and long struggles that lasted months that were like interwoven with like individual personal traumas and needing space and like all this kind of stuff. And so when Quiz is talking about like talking to his guys, they're fresh on the street, they're having culture shock, maybe they haven't had a touch tone phone, you know, like all kinds of stuff. And you know, like that is also being navigated by them and the people who are kind of like working with. But you had said before that, like, yeah, just some particulars about kind of the struggles. Is there anything else that's like feels fair to share?
I mean, they range wide. Sometimes people look at the guys inside and think that like they have everything together, they have everything figured out, we're big men. Because that's how we present ourselves. Like, we have to be big men. We have to make decisions. We have to, you know, we run households. And ultimately, that's not true. Like, I was telling my partner, it's hard still for me. And I've been home a year, and it's hard for me grocery shopping. Like, I can't decide. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm so used to just writing it on a paper and, you know, next week it's coming to the bunk pretty much. So like decision making, a lot of, and then ultimately one of the biggest problems that I'm having with my guys, and I don't like to say my guys, but these is really my dudes, but like social media is playing a big part in people's lives and what they feel is the right thing to do or the right way to be. they see these posts. And, you know, for somebody who's done 5, 10, 15 years, even 3 years, you know, you lose sense of streets. You lose sense of reality. And in order to survive in prison, you create a facade. You jump inside of a bubble that you create for yourself, and you present that day in and day out as a, this is who you are. So then when you come home, if you can't forget to step outside of that bubble and step back into reality, now you're living as a character. You're merely living as a character that you created to get through prison, whether good or bad. And a lot of these guys is coming home and they're like, still these characters. And then you have me like, nah, bro, like, you don't gotta be like this. Or, you know, like, I know what you're seeing on social media, but remember, Facebook is just like prison. You just make up whoever you wanna be and that's who you are. You know what I mean? So like, really just helping guys understand, like, you don't gotta be so hard. You feel me? Like, you don't gotta mug everybody. Everybody you see, like, isn't against you. You know, the raise of a voice, you gotta be careful with how you talk to dudes, because you raise your voice too much, they feel challenged, threatened. All sense of understanding goes out the window. Like, hey, who you talking to, bruh? Like, it's no more what you're talking about. What you're talking about don't even, it doesn't even matter no more. As soon as you raise your voice, hey, homie, I'm not that guy. Mm-hmm. So to be humane, that's probably what it is. I'm trying to help guys become humane again and realize that you got to change your CD. You got to change the CD when you step outside the gates. You not on the yard no more. You can't still have that CD playing. You on the yard. Like, you got to change the CD and become a citizen. This is Tin Can Phones Misfit Adi, and you're listening to The Balloon Show on K-Boo Portland. Before we move to the next interview, I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of K-Boo. Show your support for The Balloon Show and for K-Boo by becoming a K-Boo member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 all thrills, no frills campaign goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text kboo to 44321. Again, kboo.fm/give or text kboo, KBOO, to 44321. This is K-Boo's All Thrills, No Frills Special Winter Drive Program. Help us reach our goal of $15,000 before March 19th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, that's kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO, to 44321. And... you know, when your boss yell at you, hey, get to work. Like, what are you doing standing around? Get to work. For us? Uh-uh. Hey, come here. And now we finna fight. Now you, who you raising your voice at you? You feel me? The bleep, bleeps, bleeps. But that man didn't disrespect you in a sense of calling you a bleep, bleep, or bleep. He's a boss and he needs his employees to get to work. So just like with football, the coach is gonna yell at you. But when these guys is coming home from prison, you gotta really alter and understand the mindset of the person you're dealing with. So I'm trying to get my guys to understand the mental capacity that they possess coming home, which is hard because a grown man don't wanna hear that he doesn't possess the right qualities mentally to be successful in society. But ultimately, we don't. You have to learn to be a good adult in custody. You have to learn to be a good convict. You know what I'm saying? You don't just go to prison and be like, I'm just this dude. Like, you learn these things. Mm-hmm. So to unlearn, ultimately me helping them unlearn, you know, what has been instilled and embedded in us even before prison, growing up, your brother fight, you fight too. You better not come home crying, boy. You done got your in them streets. You don't fight back, you gonna have to fight me. These is the words of parents. Parents is telling their kids growing up, right? And then you get to prison. Hey, you go, I go. Armand, that's the homie. If you go, I go. Armand tripping, I'm tripping. Those are all the same things taught by us by our parents. If I call you my brother, what your mama say? Your brother fight, you fight. Your friends fight, you fight. But you have to also unlearn, like, that's yes, in the environments that we came up in. Yeah, your brother fight, you fight, the homies, you know, all those different. And get a deeper grips of me, right? Armand never asked me, oh, that dude tripping, we finna ride on him. Or that dude said this, we finna go beat him up. Like, my friends, I need you to put me up on college. Ben, I was in the heart of thugging on the yard when Ben was like, man, I see something different in you. Like, you're smart. You don't fit in with these dudes. Like, try school. He never wanted me to go fight people or check people. It was like, go to school, learn how to write a thesis paper, learn how to come with evidence behind whatever you say. These is life-changing situations. So I'm telling my dudes when they come home, like, bruh, calm down. Like, I understand your sister getting into it with her boyfriend, but she's been getting into it with her boyfriend. She was getting into it with her boyfriend when you was in prison. She was getting into her boyfriend when you beat him up last time, and she still was back with him. You have to unlearn that aggressive mindset, that aggressive, you know, being the answer for everybody. And these dudes is coming home and they're really running households. Like, they're coming into to households with women, with kids, and you don't even really know how to control yourself. And, you know, everybody wanna be a business owner, everybody wanna run an empire. And one thing I'm telling these dudes is, if you can't control your own emotions, how could you run an empire?
Yeah, I mean, all that is fascinating. And you had used an analogy, in fact, I don't even think it's a part of the show. It was like on that intro piece that we did for the book. And you use the analogy about the snake skin and your parents teach you in the jungle. And we talked about that inside too. And this, some of what you were saying was even more kind of like drawn out. And maybe we could find that old clip and put it on and talk about it. But, you know, when you were talking before about like guys on the stand and, you know, like snitching and they learn this code, it reminded me, I met this dude named Ari. We were AmeriCorps Vistas together in Baltimore, but he was like formerly incarcerated. Like AmeriCorps, this program was trying to like look towards a certain population and hook them up, not just incarcerated, but folks who are local, blah, blah, blah. And he told me something that was kind of wild, like not wild, wild, but it was way before I was working in this context. So it was kind of like a little bit of an intro. And he spoke poetically and he said, you know, there's a comes a time when you're a kid where you like put down the bike and you like pick up the pistol. And so kind of what you're saying, and even all of these like ingrained things and trauma as a kid, which you talked about a little bit last show, it like is so deeply ingrained that it takes a lot of like time and energy to like disentangle. But it is also like further compounded by the structural oppression of incarceration. And as you said, even if like a short period in 3 years. And so, yeah, I wanted to like, and also even like losing a sense of reality, like you kind of like hard commit in this thing that's self-destructive, and then you kind of like bring that self-destruction around with you. And I wanted to ping Armand because you were talking about your court date and like, yeah, do you want to like dive into that more, like how the kind of structure is shaping your life, you know, for boon or blessing, I guess, because I do think there is a dichotomy there that we come up on often. And so, yeah, I mean, for listeners to kind of sense that the boon and blessing is present. How do we blessing and like edit out the boon?
No, and I'm looking at it as a blessing. There's a lot there to unpack with what Quee said and with what you said, Michael. I guess bringing it back to me, because that's what my ego does, is make it by myself.
This is your star. Yeah, I mean, one of the stars twinkling.
Yeah, rehab is something I checked myself into. I have a problem. I want to be here, but also. And I was actually self-conscious because I paid a lawyer and I was like, is it good for me to be here or is this bad for the case? That's my first where my head goes is it good for the legal status that I'm trying to get help or is it bad for the legal status that I'm trying to get help? And he's like, oh, no, it's actually a good thing. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to stick with this then. And then back to what we were referring to last week, how when you get into an institution, whether it be a school, a rehab, a correctional facility, you get in this certain mindset, especially in a, like a rehab, you're dealing with a lot of people with trauma, drug addiction, obviously. And there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of people playing dominoes, playing cards, gambling on the games. You know, I can hear all that already from my quarantine. And my sponsor, I talked to him yesterday. I had our last meeting with over Zoom on our AA group or our fellowship that should be not named. And he sat me down for an hour on the phone and talked to me. And he's like, and it felt like someone coached me up for prison, for rehab. hey, man, I know how you are.
Yeah.
Guess what? You can't be taking people in the bathroom and fighting them if they did this or that. Or you can't, if someone disrespects you and whatever that looks like, you can't just act in a certain aggressive way. He even said, it's not telling, but talk to your counselor. You don't have to bring up names, but say like, hey, you're having an issue with this kind of thing, or this person is acting in this type of way that might make you react in a certain manner. And even in my mind, I'm like, dude, I'm not gonna ever do that. But I'm like, fuck, I need to listen to what this guy suggests to me, because he seems to be on to something. Yeah, so it's weird that he had that conversation with me yesterday. You know, we were taught as a kid, and through, you know, through whatever street politics you live through, don't be a tattletale, man. And yeah.
This is Tin Can Phones Misfit Adi, and you're listening to The Balloon Show on KBOO Portland. Before we move to the next interview, I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for The Balloon Show and for KBOO by becoming a KBOO member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 All Thrills, No Frills campaign goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO to 44321. This is KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills special winter drive program. Help us reach our goal of $15,000 before March 19th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, that's kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO to 44321. And...
you know, it was, you were saying something, we were talking on the phone and you used this phrase, telling on yourself, which was kind of funny, but is interesting, right? Like, you kind of even incorporate it into oneself and then like reject this paradigm where you like deny the thing that's bad that you've done or feel that's bad. And then like, you know, I don't know, create some sort of pattern. Does that sound like it, you can identify?
Well, for sure, because it's like, even with my pending legal case, like, I know what's up, but I'm innocent until proven guilty, and you know what I mean? So I'm out and I'm innocent. So it's like, there's layers to it of wanting to live a life of rigorous honesty. I want to be a very honest man, but then also this whole ambiguity of the law world, the legal world that you have to live in. And so there's layers to that, man. And I would always say too, when I was running around out there committing no goods, that, you know, I would do time for people that would never do the same thing for me. You know what I mean? I would put my whole Jeopardy freedom at, because I knew in my heart, if I was sat down in a room because I was very conscious with investigation with this, you know, whether I have $300,000 in my bank account or negative $300, yo, I'm not talking. I need a lawyer present before anything's happening. And even when they come out, you know, and Ben even said it in the episode that I recorded with him, he said, he talked about this kid that got a tattoo tatted on him.
Mm.
Yeah, so Ben talked about, while he was locked up at OSP, a 19-year-old or 18-year-old's word on the street, on the yard, was that he had said, you know, some incriminating things against his co-defendant, and that someone tattooed some vulgarity on him. And Ben even acknowledged, he's like, man, these are professional investigators. Their job is to get information out of you, and if you don't know how to act accordingly, that could blemish your name while you're inside. And yep. You could have been tricked into that by not even knowing it. You thought you're down with the code, and now you've gone against what you thought you were supposed to be doing on accident. So it's crazy, you know?
I mean, it's interesting. We talk a lot about how the system trains you or tricks you. And I did want to talk a little bit about, because right now, being COVID era, all of the parole facilities are like remote or closed or whatever. And it's interesting too, because I have a peer collaborator that I do Gallery Blue with, and we are currently doing an installation at DCJ East, which is the parole probation office in Southeast Portland. And it's fun because we're kind of like with the brass or whatever. We're like with the uppity ups and we get to kind of just say whatever we want. And so we're kind of, you know, wording them up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like they work in the industry. And then so in some ways they can even understand our shorthand. But they're never really talking with people who have the experience that me and Blue have that can leverage, because usually they're in a power position. So everyone they're talking to who's grappling with the situation, they have power over. And so that kind of changes both how they're perceiving the relationship or what that person can say. And so Blue mentioned, he said, for some guys, like the fact that parole offices are kind of more closed are saving their lives. You know what I mean? Like you said, court, yes. You put on a button-up shirt, boom, bang, bing, it's over. They're not putting you in jail, which I do want to talk about sentencing in a minute. But I also want to talk about, like, has parole not being in person and kind of more looming been, have that influenced either of your lives? And I guess, Queez, I know some things have been different than they would have been. What's that been like?
I mean, it's been good for me. It's been good for me, but understanding also that I completed my classes, I completed all my programs, all the things that were stipulated to me that I had to complete was completed before COVID really hit, you know what I mean? So like, yeah, like really the only difference is like not having to go in and see him. He never UA'd me, like it was urine analysis. He's never UA'd me. I UA'd for my halfway house, which is subsidy housing. What was that spot called?
States.
No, I wasn't at the States. I was on across the street from it. Shoreline. I was at the Shoreline. I UA for them. I UA for Volunteers of America. So for me personally, my parole has been cool. It was the other agencies that was making me jump through hoops. But I completed all that before COVID hit. What COVID did for me was gave me the chance to get my living situation right. You know, not too much worry about the pop-ups, because a thing for me is like when you got a sister, a brother, a girlfriend, or a friend that lets you live with them on parole, like they want you to be on the lease, parole, want to go check their background, check them out, you know, they kind of become on parole also.
Mm-mm.
And so like for me, I always had a battle with my appeal, telling my appeal, like I don't want it was my sister who I live with, like I don't want her questioned. I don't want her, you know, you checking out her background, even though she doesn't get in trouble, for somebody to know, like, why are they looking at me? Why are they checking me out? Why they, like, I feel like I'm on parole too. And these is coming from her mouth, like, damn, bro, like, I feel like I'm on parole too. Like, I'd be kind of scared myself. Like, he just gonna pop up. Mm-hmm. Like, my sister can't enjoy her life. Mm-hmm. My sister can't enjoy her life because at any moment, P.O. popping up. And he's not just, they may come for me, but what they do when they come in, they looking at everything. Who on the couch? Who room is this? Who shoes is these? Who is these people? They want to know every single person you're around, because the people you're around kind of tells them who you are and what you're doing. So with the COVID hitting and them being out of office, what that did for me was it gave comfort to the ones around me.
Sure.
It gave comfort to the ones, you know, that I was dealing with, so they didn't have to worry. And it was also a thing too where I tell people like, hey, they're not gonna pop up. Like, you know, I'm gonna be here. Like, you know, if they let me live here, they're not gonna pop up. It's such a big thing, because when people care for you, and you, even if you just spend a night at somebody's house, that's a friend. You gotta let your PO know the address. You gotta let your PO know their phone number. Like, your PO is checking them out too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now it's like, what's up, bro? I'm gonna come with you. I'm gonna be over there, you feel me? But you know, my PO ain't tripping. Like, I ain't gotta give my PO your info and all that shit. He's not really tripping. It became a call once a month. Now, mind you, for me, it's different because I completed everything. So it was email. Just email me. Email me once a month. You working. You doing what you're supposed to do. You off the radar. Email me once a month. And that was like for parole. That is because we must understand doing the time is one thing. But coming home with that tail on you with parole is harder, because you're on the streets with the free will to choose to do what you want to do. But just know that you got these babysitters, you got these people that's watching you. And at any moment, if they feel you're doing something wrong, you don't necessarily have to do something wrong. If they feel you're doing something wrong, if they feel you're lying to them, there's this thing called a violation. It's not a revoke. They're not going to send you back to prison. But this violation, huh? Go take this 10 days in jail just so we can see what you was doing and get the investigating and making sure you... That's just to make sure you're not doing nothing wrong, because I'm not too sure. So let me just take this 7 days, take this 10 days, you know, for this... you ran a red light or something. You feel me? Like something super minute that you usually wouldn't get in trouble for. But if you high risk and you've messed up on parole before, like I did mess up on parole before and got revoked, it was different for me because my PO kept telling me, well, I'm dealing with the person that's on this paper. Mm-hmm. I'm dealing with the person that I'm reading about right here in front of me until you show me that you're not this person.
Right.
Even though I just finished doing 3 years in prison.
Yeah.
But if you think I'm the same person from 3 years ago with or without parole, like, come on, people grow. That's what we do as beings. So like, and people change. So for me, the COVID part just took away the stresses of, is he gonna pop up on me? Letting my sister know, hey, you can smoke in the house because my PO is not coming. Like, they're not in office. They're not doing home visits due to COVID. We could smoke comfortably in the house, or she can have company over and not worry about, is this parole officer coming? Because if you have company and you're not on parole, but you got a parole officer coming to your house, what is that going to leave your partner or your friends? Or, you know, people don't feel comfortable in a house with a parolee. Because I can't be my, I got to be conscious of just being myself because he might pop up.
Yeah.
So with COVID, it took away that uncomfortability of being at home. Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing, the uncomfortability of being at home.
This is Tin Can Phones Misfit Adi, and you're listening to The Balloon Show on K-Boo Portland. Before we move to the next interview, I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of K-Boo. Show your support for The Balloon Show and for K-Boo by becoming a K-Boo member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 all thrills, no frills campaign goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text kboo to 44321. Again, kboo.fm/give or text kboo, KBOO to 44321. This is K-Boo's All Thrills, No Frills Special Winter Drive Program. Help us reach our goal of $15,000 before March 19th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, that's kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO to 44321. And...
you said a bunch of really interesting things, and I right when you finished, I was thinking about Ben. One of the last conversations I had with him, he mentioned that he just found out his roommates were like dealing, and it's interesting because they were obviously I don't know how he ended up there, but I think was kind of like ex-con situation. Yep. And so you can also, it's like you get your hustle on and you know that there might be a pop-up, so you just have your situation, but you're still kind of like, you know, Ben, he was like, I'm trying to get out of here. And so like, that's like, I'm in the situation where like, you know, maybe whatever, we can't rewrite the situation, but you know, he was trying to get away from this stuff, but you kind of get corralled. And I said it a few times, but the system kind of like forces you into certain parameters. And as you were talking, Queez, I was just thinking about like what has come up really in this contemporary discourse around prison abolition is that police are essentially the evolution of like the slave catching entities of the Americas. And so there's these techniques of like rooting out the terrorist kind of thing that is just like how people are kind of getting managed. Though, and I don't know what you have to say about this, Mom, but it's interesting too, the other arm of what Blue said is like, it's been great for some guys and like has been great for Blue. And Blue, whether it's over the phone or not, they still, even though he passed, like he wanted to move areas kind of like you did, and they were like, you got to take the classes over. You got to pay for them. You got to take them over. And he was like, this is insulting. Like, you know, and it became an emotional drain. He passed, you know, he was theoretically wrongfully incarcerated. So it's just insulting to keep getting asked to like justify your humanity or whatever, because they clearly don't believe it. They're just trying to put you through hoops and catch you stumbling. But I think there are people, especially when it's substances, there is some stumbling and or there is the necessity to like leave behind the communities you are with. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you have these free will and choices, and it is almost systems that can support. But again, it's that boon or blessing. Like it's really hard to know what is doing what. And also, I mean, I don't know if Mon, you have anything to say that about that generally or directly with you, but where also we commented about maybe being like a man short and talking a little bit about that, is like there is some sort somewhere in the system an attempt to like keep people from being self-destructive, but it is done in a way that almost ratchets up self-destructive behavior. So anyway, I don't know, just was putting some of those things on the burner.
Yeah, again, a lot to unpack there, but first off, parole and probation, it varies state from state, county to county, what your crimes did, it advocates what kind of conditions you have when you get out. For me, I also was by the book. Like, I did all the classes. My parole and probation never UA'd me also, but I did it through classes, and I was clean. And my last UA came up as the loot, which I was 100% clean for. I drank too much water that day. And then the facility was like, well, you're going to have to start everything over again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no. And that's when I, at least I had at least savvy where I filed a grievance on the facility. I went to my parole officer and everything. And just because of that, they were able, he was like, okay, I'm not going to make you redo all the classes after 4 months. You just did this every single week for 4 months. But also when I got sentenced too, I had a deal where I got small bit, he called it an inside out deal. I got a small end deal on the front, 20 months of the front with a long suspended sentence at the back end when I came out. So I came out on probation with three times as much time hanging over my head. So when I was inside, I wasn't even worried about like the time right then. I was worried about the time when I was coming out.
Right.
Because I knew what, like, some of this parole's like, you can't be around known drug users. Like, very, very ambiguous words. Like, you can't be around people that smoke weed, drink, or this. I was 27. I came in there because of addiction and because of other choices I made. I didn't know anyone else that didn't live like that. How you tell me to come out and then to just magically not know anyone and then find those networks? And then, so there's, I mean, and I know with some counties, depending on your crimes, it can make you subject to lie detector tests. And with those lie detector tests, then they can violate you on that. And I know in some states, you can't even be around known felons. Now, I don't know if this is how it works in California. I don't know if this is how certain parole probation works in Oregon, not on mine. But some conditions is if you are in a car mm-hmm. with someone else that's also just a felon and you're illegally driving and maybe did a red turn or something, you're now in violation because you're with someone else that's a felon. So, I mean, a lot of room to fuck it up, a lot of room for error for sure.
Which is like a specifically interesting caveat because also for me, and is like interesting in like a super funny, interesting way where like, I think we were gently implied that what I'm doing now with you is like not okay or whatever. And you know what I mean? Cause like once you're out, like we met inside and once you're out, like I'm helping you to do crime or whatever. I'm in danger, who knows? Some concern exists. And so therefore, but you know, and specifically with this project, we did, you have something?
Well, I just wanted to tie something for you, Michael. And I think that you might find it interesting. So in the book, The Jim Crow Law, right?
Hit it.
There was this thing called convict leasing. And that's when they had the free Negro, as they called it. And they never equipped these guys with tools to get through life. It was just like, okay, you went from slavery to just being free. Like, just go. Mm-hmm. And what they called the dudes that they was arresting, they said they roamed the country yard aimlessly. Mm-hmm. In crime, so littering, you know, any small crime that they did, they charged them with a fine of $25. And if you know back then, $25 was pretty much 25 million for us, or a lifetime of hard labor, right? Yep. So what I bring that up to say, like when they let them dudes out, or when they would, convict leasing was a slave master could rent inmates to work on the plantation, and if they died, it was, the book specifically said it was never a worry when the slaves died because the police would literally drive through the countryside and get roaming free Negroes and arrest them for the fact of just getting another body to the slave master, right? That's parole. So with parole, it's a systematic slavery. It's not like them saying, let's go get black people and put them back in jail.
Yeah, sure.
But it's that tail though. It's like Armand said, I could not even know Armand's on parole, and we could meet up like, hey buddy, let's go get a burger. Right. We're both going to jail, right? It's systematic.
It's yeah, like it's hilarious fun. And not hilarious
it's
at just, all.
It's systematic though. Like, they let us out of prison. They don't teach us anything in there. Mm-hmm. They don't teach us really. Everything that you learn in prison, you're going to go seek out, and you're going to have right. to figure it out yourself. Even the classes that they do provide, they don't wake nobody up to say, go to this class. They don't wake nobody. They don't, like, you know, you might be in the shower and it might be class time. They're not going to alert you like, hey, you got to be in this class at this time. Like, hey, this time is coming. They don't want you in the class because they don't even want the class in there in the first place. Mm-hmm. Just because they allow the classes in there, they do not want you guys in there. They did not want volunteers in there because you humanize us. Mm-hmm. And the system itself is dehumanizing to the ones that's captured, that has been kidnapped and put in there. So they let us out, and then they just say, all right, you're free, but you know, you're on parole, so hey, hopefully your ass don't do nothing. You right. know? And the tie is, they let us out without the proper tools to achieve.
This is Tin Can Phones, Misfit Adi, and you're listening to The Balloon Show on KBOO Portland. Before we move to the next interview, I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for The Balloon Show and for KBOO by becoming a KBOO member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 All Thrills, No Frills campaign goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text kboo to 44321. Again, kboo.fm/give or text kboo, KBOO to 44321. This is KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills Special Winter Drive Program. Help us reach our goal of $15,000 before March 19th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, that's kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO to 44321. And...
you know, and then it's like one little slip up or let me just say Jamal over there slips up and do something and we have the same parole officer. Now that parole officer in his head thinks everybody that look like yeah. Jamal is doing what Jamal does.
Yeah.
But this has been going on since slavery and since the Jim Crow law. Like, it's always been like the odds at the guesses. I don't understand how the court sentenced me to 5 years but then 3 years parole. Like, right. there shouldn't be no parole. Like, if it's 5 years, then it should be 2 years inside, 3 years parole, sure. or vice versa. You know, it shouldn't be 5 years. That's 8 years if you think about it. Because now you have the ability to lock me up whenever you, like I said earlier, sure. you don't necessarily have to be doing something. But if it looked like you are, or if you might be, then they come in to kidnap you again. They're coming to take you away again.
One quick point, I'll pass it right back to you, Mike. And it's true. It's like, even when you're like, I had classes that my insurance didn't pay for when it was like an anger management class. And thank God I had $35 in my pocket every single week to pay for that class mm-hmm. on my own. But I even asked, I said, hey, I mean, money's tight. Like, what if I couldn't pay for this? Like, what is the option? If I wanted to go to this class and do what you guys wanted me to do, but I did not have the money, what is the option? He said, well, you can come in for county work crew every weekend and work, you know, you can go work for your $5 to $10 an hour on the wood yard out in the county that I'm out, and you can pay it off that way. Good luck. Yeah. You know, so that's how it is. So back to
I
you.
I mean, it's so fascinating, all the stuff we're bringing up in the show. And that's kind of the way for y'all who have listened in till now, like when we started this, it was like, where do we start? Like, there's just too much. And that was one of the reasons, or even as I discovered myself, for bringing in that brother, oh brother, we're out thou, because they literally start on a chain gang, you know what I mean? Like, the concept and premise is a weird mirror, but I guess it's like not a surprise that all of these things have existed and continue to exist, and there's like even creative content built around them. So, and I appreciate you even linking it to Jim Crow, because that is totally what's happening. And for those of you who are even not tracking that part of the conversation, you can read The New Jim Crow, which is will kind of put the layers on what's going on now. And yeah, I mean, all of that. Well, the thing I was going to say is, like, this project has been gently sanctioned, which, I mean, no one can stop us or whatever. But, you know, it was said, as long as it's like for the positive development of whoever the guy is, then it probably is fine. And I was trying to be careful around it. But at this point also, and even our last episode or the grander premise or Queez was talking about at the beginning, is it takes actually a level of investment beyond. And someone, I did a presentation as an artist, and they're like, how do you fund your work? And I said, the first step is it's not sustainable. I do not get paid for my time. Like, I'm invested beyond what capitalism can sustain. And it is only through that it might even happen. But, you know, want to bring up, like Queez is saying, is like, though in this struggle of this civil war, this frontline skirmish, there are both people dying and someone is making some money. And so, as Armand said, and I actually brought up, Armand, you mentioned the last time we recorded that they're closing prisons. I talked to Blue about that and he goes, they're small ones. You know what, yeah. I mean? And like you said, the way that the law is, like, we can't do what Jersey did. And so we're kind of tying all the pieces together and appropriately timed that. Armand brought us to our awareness a KBOO snippet, which, thanks KBOO. Hopefully this is your airwaves you're hearing us on right now. But about essentially someone who's on a partner of a person who's incarcerated, that their partner was grappling with COVID. But a lot of that, and is mirrors again our prior episode with Queez and the work, essentially a workplace situation, but under more or less slave-like conditions that are, because of contagion, literally leading to the loss of life.
Two Rivers Correctional Institute in Umatilla, Oregon reported 5 COVID deaths, although in the man that's locked up speculates that there might have been more. He said up to 9 deaths related to COVID within there. And part of the unit, how these guys were contracting it, is, you know, Two Rivers. And again, I didn't do time there, so I don't know exactly how it works, but I know enough to know that they have a deal with the state hospitals and some of the state institutions where they do all the laundry. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that COVID laundry, that dirty surgical sheets and whatnot, that was being shipped to these guys. Mm-hmm. They were being paid $30, $40, or $50 or whatever a month to work 5 days a week to wash this up. And man, so.
And then, so part of it is also, and I thought where you were going, but is when you said unit, is similar to the layout of CRCI, where they're like 88 person units. And I don't know if we've done that on the show, but it's relevant to do now. Will one of you describe what is a unit? I've only seen it for like 10 seconds because my tour was short for whatever reason. But yeah, the experiential account has value.
Well, how you do your time and your unit is all dependent on the facility. Like certain counties, I've done time in every sort of way you can. Like, I've done unit in a cell by myself. I've done unit in a cell where I have a cellie, someone in there with me. I've done time in dorm settings, whether that be a 6-man dorm, 14-man dorm. CRCI was, I believe, 60-man dorms. And I know in California, man, they got entire gymnasium, 100-plus people dorms. Bet. And I know in a lot of places. So, again, please elaborate a little bit about the units.
Yeah, like close quarters. It's most definitely close quarters. The bunks are approximately 5 inches away from each other. Like, that's the space that you have, that little space in between the two bunks is where your property go, where your belongings go. And that's in a dorm setting. In a cell setting, I mean, we all know what a cell look like, 9 by 12 sometimes. But in California, like, the gymnasium is even tighter quarters. It's like 50-some bunks, 60-some bunks with up and down.
Triple bunks.
Yeah, oh, up and bunk beds. Bunk beds. And then understanding, what makes it worse is understanding the segregation of prison and already being in tight quarters. You have to now be careful not to step in the wrong area. outside of the bunks, because now you disrespectful, or you know that's how race riots and all these different things occur, literally just by you misstepping in a certain part of this super tight gym that they have turned into a unit. And what I do know about COVID in prison right now, like we mentioned in the last episode, is anybody that's COVID symptoms or have tested positive for COVID is getting sent to one to two dorms, and you just there. Like, you're there. It's not a medical situation where every person is, let me go check on this person 14 days or your symptoms is over. Once you're there until they remember to get you out of there, pretty much. Till they feel, you know, in quarantine, what I was reading too, with the Two Rivers cases, even the quarantining wasn't long enough. They send you to a unit where, you know, you supposed to be quarantined from the rest of the prison. But instead of a 14 or 21 day quarantine, you might get a 10. Of 15 mm-hmm. days, and then you ride back to the unit. So it defeats the purpose of taking you off the unit in the first place, because the virus is living well in your body and you're right. still, you know, and then you're going back to unit, what they call GP, which is general population, with the rest of the prison, you know. And then that's why Two Rivers right now is at 600.
Yeah.
600 positive cases, you know what I mean? And then Columbia River, that holds 430 people, is 250 people tested positive already.
Right.
And this is 250 people. Mind you, Armand just said that the dorm at Columbia River is a 60-man dorm. They have two dorms. I'm not the smartest, but I think that's 120 beds. Mm-hmm. And 250 people tested positive.
Right.
This is Tin Can Phones, Misfit Adi, and you're listening to The Balloon Show on KBOO Portland. Before we move to the next interview, I want to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for The Balloon Show and for KBOO by becoming a KBOO member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 All Thrills, No Frills campaign goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO to 44321. This is KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills special winter drive program. Help us reach our goal of $15,000 before March 19th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Again, that's kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO to 44321. And...
yeah, I mean, it's some interesting stuff there too, because something that I think Joe, when he first got out, was talking about, we are quarantined. We're in a safe 100-person bubble. It's the guards, the 10, 15, 20 guards who are coming out every day, mm-hmm. and then they're not wearing masks, and mm-hmm. people can't get access to masks. And how this conversation started is they were still doing laundry. So you don't got the improper quarantine, people are coming in and out of your 50-person bubble. And was interesting because when we started to really boot up the outside version of the show, we were talking to Wilford and y'all were out, but it was COVID times. And it was funny. It was hilarious. Wilford was like getting all up next to me. I'm like, dog, no. But also like, he was like, let's do an episode. Like, what if you were inside? And so now we're really starting to get those stories. Like it was prior to even, you know, it was a media blackout for prisons. And now they've kind of like cracked their doors open a little bit, but it is all real wild, and we're just doing what we can to like get you all the deets. Soon we'll do an episode with a guy who's experienced it firsthand inside, and we'll be able to get some more details there. But just want to really highlight again this larger paradigm of the state controlling stuff, or whatever imperial force you want to name, individual corporate entities. People are making, you know, this little snippet off KBOO mentioned that last year, prisons posted like $2 million in profits. You know what I mean? Like, it's properly remains modern day slavery in a literal sense. And prior to booting up the show, Armand was like, man, you got to watch the show Locked Up Abroad. And the conditions are not even that different. I mean, it's like, a little bit more wild in some ways, but funnily, I think most of those shows, they weren't even laboring. It was kind of like just sitting around and like managing, like pumping water and stuff and like trying to stay alive in the conditions. It's all, it's like just as bad, you know. It's like the bed is dry, get to work, you know. It's like you have a cold or COVID, like gargle with salt water. So yeah. It's again, we're slowly trying to even just create a setting for our listeners to understand what even the context we're talking about. And soon we'll be having more guests and kind of like expand the gaze of what's going on. But we have a little bit of time before we need to scuttle on. Does anyone want to talk about our man down, or I don't even know what the proper language
is? Yeah, but before we dive into that, listen, to our listeners, understand that those guys on the inside are not just monsters. They're not just inmates. They're not just adults in custody. These are fathers. These are sons. These are brothers and sisters. These are humans. So, I mean, for me, you know, the dome building, whatever institution, you know, the ones that they may be in, like, we have to understand that these are humans in animal conditions. These are humans living in animal situations, animalistic situations. You know, I had a volunteer tell me before that he grew up understanding that if they're in prison, you might as well kill them all. They're monsters. You might as well kill them all. They're, you know, they've done whatever the internet said they have done. I just want to take this time to say, like, these are real life humans. These are real life fathers and mothers. These are brothers and sisters. These are grandkids to people, and they're living like animals. So support, don't just ignore, and don't just, I don't know them, so it doesn't mean anything. Like, oh, they did this crime, let them ride in there. Let's please unlearn that mindset, because these are real life humans that you're talking about. And I'm talking about one slip up, accidentally hit somebody with your car, accidentally get drunk and get into a car crash and kill your friend. You will be in there too. Accidents happen. And I'm not saying everybody's innocent, but accidents happen. These are humans in there living in animalistic conditions. Please, please understand that.
And yeah, one small point too, out of the, I believe, millions of people in this country that are locked up, 95% of them are not sentenced to a natural life sentence. They are not only fathers, potentially brothers, sisters, cousins. They're about to be your neighbor too. Facts. They're coming back out here in these streets. They're going to be your community neighbor. Facts. How do you want that person to act like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think both salient points, and really does well to kind of like keep us on track to say that right now, you know, there are entities that are in charge of rehabilitation or whatever, and it's like not working or whatever. And that's why I've dived in and stayed. And that was Ben's dream, is like, you know, it is this disenfranchised, marginalized group that is in the only position to help itself and otherwise are people in your community that need help. And so if the show can do anything, one of the original ethoses of trying to get the message out there is what we are sharing. And again, bringing it all back home, you know, we got a guy that's home but not home.
Yeah. So let's understand that an addiction is a poison. And, you know, nobody asks to be addicted to anything. And once they get there, we would never understand why they stay there. Addiction, bro. Like, our brother, we lost our brother to addiction, you know. Joe Rosenberger, that is. It's my partner, man. That's our brother. You know, his addiction is hallucinogens. It's not heroin. It's not meth. It's not, you know, the things that we just said. Oh, addiction, it must be one of these. He was taking, and I think it started out with mushrooms, and it was, what do you call it, recreational doses. He was a little bit with his coffee in the morning just to, you know, be focused and get the day started. And that led to, you know, when you in this world that's colorful, and, you know, you're in a world where everything, you see things different. You see things how you want them to be. And that play is called a psychedelic. And you know, you get hooked in that world. You can't visit this world that's so peaceful, so colorful, so amazing, and then in a matter of however many hours, you're back into reality. For people who have been trapped in a world called prison, it's a whole world within itself. So when you caught into that world and you're stuck there, and then you could come home and be introduced to this beautiful world where everything is rainbows and, you know, you want to be there. So you're going to do whatever it takes to continue to be there because you're not on drugs. It's a hallucinogen. It just helps me focus a little bit more and it helps me see things different. So it's not a drug. I just do it with my coffee every day until you're doing it 2 or 3 times a day so that you don't have to ever be back in this world and you could get lost in that world. And that's what happened to our brother. He didn't get on a drug that had him in a dark place. He was on something that he felt opened his horizon and opened his mind to a brighter world, a world that everyone
this
isn't able to live in.
This is KBOO Portland.
What would KBOO be without its more than 300 volunteers? They support the station with everything, and now they need someone to support them. KBOO is looking for a community organizer who would bolster and empower our volunteers. Are you the right person, or do you know someone who is? Then go to kboo.fm to learn more about the essential functions of the volunteer coordinator and the qualifications we're looking for. To apply, please email your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org by Sunday, March 6 at midnight. You can also apply by mailing your resume and cover letter to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 9721.